Greetings, everyone. This is the Morning Lineup podcast for December 16th, 2017. I'm Anthony Kastrovince, and the hot stove action is finally starting to come to fruition. Let's bring in our friend Richard Justice. Richard, we got through the winter meetings. It wasn't quite the accelerated pace of movement we expected, but lo and behold, the last couple of days of the week have finally started to get some traction in the free agent market.
Yeah, I'm convinced that it's going to be, maybe it's this way every year, I can't even remember, a bottom-up free agent market, and that Ohtani and Stanton did set the whole thing back about a month, and now teams are exploring what trades they can make before jumping into the real deep water of free agency. But we had enough action. We had a good bit of action this week, with teams like the Astros, the Angels, the Padres, the Phillies. So there's a lot to talk about.
There is. And you mentioned the Phillies, and they made a huge deal on Friday signing Carlos Santana. I mean, you said it's sort of a bottoms-up free agency. It's kind of all over the place, really. There's no rhyme or reason to who's going where. It's not the typical dominoes falling, not the sensible dominoes falling. Santana was, the second first baseman on the market in most people's eyes behind Eric Hosmer, but lo and behold, he's the first one to come off the board. It's reported as a 3-year, $60 million contract for Carlos Santana. In my eyes, Richard, this is a fairly underappreciated player. Consistently gets on base, .365 career on base percentage. Doesn't have maybe the typical power of a first baseman, especially in this environment. He has 130 homer season, but a guy that in this day and age, in this industry, with the way people value just that act of getting on base, to go with improved defense at first base is a nice pickup for the Phillies. It's just also a surprising pickup for the Phillies, given where they were viewed in the competitive timetable. But I think we had said earlier this offseason, this could be a team more aggressive than people realize.
Yeah. And that's the thing that about Carlos Santana. Obviously, you've seen him a lot. I wanted to ask you, defensively at first base, how is he?
You asked me that question a couple years ago, and I tell you, as a first baseman, he makes a great DH. But I got to give the guy a lot of credit. He really worked to remake himself. And, the looming free agency no doubt played a role in that. And he came in 2017, with all eyes on getting a deal of this, of this magnitude. But legitimately was really good over there, especially in 2017. I thought he should have been the Gold Glove winner, quite frankly, over Eric Hosmer. But and he graded out well in all the advanced analytics. So you give him credit. He's gotten to be, this is a guy Terry Francona has said, it's rare for a guy to really change himself over the course of his career. And it's not that he was a bad teammate or anything before, but he's become a great teammate. So the Phillies are getting a good one, but what do you make of the Phillies right now? They really beefed up their bullpen, Tommy Hunter, Pat Neshek, they're making some moves. They had a very clear payroll picture. And I think most people assumed, that was to stay clear for next winter when, Manny Machado, Bryce Harper, and just a deep free agent class in general. And they still are in good position for that market, but it seems like they're trying to accelerate their timetable a little bit here.
Yeah, and we've seen them in spurts the last couple of years where you watch them play for a 2-3 week period and you go, this team's got a chance, because Herrera is a really exciting player. Hoskins was good when he came up. And I think some of these teams, I think the Red Sox are going to play a waiting game with J.D. Martinez and or Eric Hosmer. I think the Giants are going to just play the Scott Boras timetable and see. And the Phillies weren't going to do that, and they didn't want to be put in position to finish second on all those guys. And they saw Santana as a deal. 3 years, that's a good deal for a run producer. Again, that on-base percentage just jumps off at you, the number of walks, all of that jumps out at you. So, yeah, and they had basically no money committed for this year. And I think they may try to do more, as I don't think knowing Andy McPhail and those guys, I don't think they're going to go $180 million on a guy. But I think they feel like, after five straight losing seasons, no playoffs since 2011, we've gotten enough good young players now, like J.P. Crawford and all, that we can start to move in the right direction.
Well, you mentioned $180 million. Some guys who want somewhere in the neighborhood of that, actually north of that, are J.D. Martinez and Eric Hosmer. Santana's, as we said, the first big position player to come off the board. And what does that mean for these guys? Hosmer, obviously, is more specific as a fellow first baseman, but, does this change the market for them at all?
No, I don't think so. You know, I think Scott Boras is a nation unto himself. And it was pretty clear in communicating with Dave Dombrowski this week that he's ready to do a deal and Scott is not. And, you know, I mean, Dave Dombrowski is one of the most play it close to the vest of any executives I have ever known. And when he says, well, it's pretty obvious what would fit with our club. And Scott is not a guy to play the numbers game. And he's just going to, you know, what he said was because of Ohtani and Stanton, things are delayed. Now teams are playing the trade game. Is Longoria going to be traded, Machado? You know, are those teams going to be broken up? And we're in a different era. You know, used to, you wanted to get things done by Christmas. The January market had a different stigma to it. I don't know if stigma is the right word, but we're going to have good players. We haven't had any of the top nine come off the board. Maybe Santana's the first, I guess. And Greg Holland, if he gets that deal done with the Rockies. But after that, you know, I think a lot of those guys are going to spill into January because I think Scott wants to sky's the limit, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess Carlos Santana signing with anybody other than the Red Sox is maybe good for Hosmer. Obviously, you know, that's a natural fit there, but so is Martinez. And I don't know if they, certainly there's been a lot of columns saying they should sign both of those guys, but you know, whether they actually have the capability or desire to do that, you know, very much remains to be seen. We did have some other activity on Friday. The Phillies had one guy coming in and one guy going out. They traded shortstop Freddy Galvis to the San Diego Padres, another team that's been somewhat of a surprise this winter in the way they've gone about things. They had the Chase Headley trade earlier in the week and could still flip him. But, you know, Galvis adds another body to that infield. Richard, it feels like the Padres have been looking for stability at shortstop for, you know, the majority of this decade, if not longer. What does Galvis bring to them, and what do you make of that move?
I like him. I think he brings a lot, but I think he's still a stopgap because I think Fernando Tatis Jr. is their guy. He's one of their top prospects. I think we rate him number four. And so Galvis is probably here to finish the year. You know, you never rule anything out. Maybe there's another position in his future or something like that. But what it did, you know, from the beginning, I think most of us who thought it out, kind of penciled Zach Cozart in as playing for the Padres. That was the team with the glaring need at shortstop. And obviously, Zach Cozart's going to learn another position. We'll talk about that later. And once he came off the board, it's a good move. It gets the Phillies a prospect. You know, Galvis was sort of the odd man out. And it's one of those trades that makes sense for both people, sort of stabilizes things for San Diego. And really for the Padres, it's going to come down to the progress of all those young guys as we watch Austin Hedges grow up in Margot and Renfro and, you know, et cetera. And I think it's an interesting move because we know he can play the position.
That we do. And, you know, that position is interesting because, you know, few clear contenders looking for shortstop help in this day and age. So many of them are set with this, just so many elite young shortstops in the game these days. But and that's what made Cozart's market so interesting coming off a career year. And lo and behold, you know, his deal, as you said, it's not to play shortstop. It's to move off the position to third base. And it's not that Cozart was a bad shortstop by any means. He was a pretty good one over there for the Reds. But, you know, I think most guys would defer to Andrelton Simmons as the better defensive shortstop. No shame in that. And no shame in signing a 3-year, $38 million deal. But I think, you know, relative to Cozart's production this year, you know, he really came a long way offensively. I call him one of those Joey Votto disciples. And, you know, listeners of this podcast know how much we like Joey Votto. But those guys on that Reds lineup, the younger guys, learned a lot from him. And Cozart really took off this year. 933 OPS. And this Angels team, man, they've had as impressive a winter as anybody with the Shohei Ohtani signing, the Cozart signing. It's been, and they brought back Justin Upton. It's been one thing after another with that club. And I don't know how much they've closed the gap with the Astros, but they certainly made themselves at the very least, you know, look like a legitimate wild card contender.
Oh, no question. They're not fooling around. Now, you know, it's probably still going to come down to Garrett Richards, Matt Shoemaker, Tyler Skaggs. If they're healthy and productive, the Angels are a really good team, but they're not fooling around, you know, to go get Ian Kinsler, a really good defensive second baseman. He dropped off offensively last year. And then, you know, I don't know. I mean, Cozart is one of those. Zach Cozart's one of those guys that's just held in a certain place, high in a certain high esteem among people that play against him, people that play with him, people that coach him, manage him. He's a pro. I just could see this team. You know, I know how much Brad Ausmus thought of Ian Kinsler, and to now have that infield with the, you know, arguably one of the great defensive shortstops, Andrelton Simmons of the last decade, and to have Mike Trout in center field, it's pretty cool what they're doing there in Anaheim. Going to be some great baseball there.
Well, Cozart spoke with the media in Anaheim on Friday. Here's what he had to say.
I've been on some bad teams lately, and, you know, that was one of the big things about, you know, when I found out the Angels were interested, that was one of the big things for me was, hey, you know, I, you know, should be a really good team to join. So, you know, I was on board, and then, you know, when we could get Ian, when I found that out, I was a little shocked because everything was happening so quick. But at the end of the day, I want to win. So, you know, third base, I've already talked with or texted briefly with Eric Chavez. I'm going to pick his brain. I'm sure I'll be talking with Scott Rowland. I came up with him my rookie year and pick his brain a little bit. So I'm going to hit it head on.
And Richard, you know, the other ripple effect of the Zach Cozart signing with the Angels is the whereabouts of the Zach Cozart donkey. If you remember, at the All-Star game or before the All-Star game, Joey Votto put it out there that if the fans vote in Zach Cozart as the starting shortstop for the National League, he would buy his teammate a donkey. It also went back to spring training when Cozart had taken his young. There's this donkey. You've probably seen it in Goodyear, Arizona. There's this donkey farm, and Cozart had taken his kid to that farm one day, and Votto asked him about it, and he said, "Oh, you like donkeys?" So I said, "Yeah, I kind of like donkeys." So he made that promise to him that if he's voted in, you know, he would buy him a donkey. And sure enough, the fans took care of it. Cozart did his part, of course, with a great first half, and now he's got this pet donkey. And I'll be curious to see. I think it went back home with him after the season. I know they had the big ceremony where they brought it out on the field at Great American Ballpark, and I believe he took it home to Tennessee. But maybe that donkey will roam somewhere outside of somewhere in Orange County now.
Just say this: everybody needs competition, and now the rally monkey has some competition in Anaheim. The donkey's going to bring his game. You know, at the All-Star game, I was saying to Votto, hey, that's a cool thing about the donkey. That was the guy got a lot of laughs. And Rob Butcher, the great PR man from the Reds, goes, no, he's going to do it. I'm going to have a donkey to deal with when we get back. I went, oh, you mean he was serious about the donkey? And Votto goes, yeah, I wasn't joking. Man needs a donkey, wants a donkey for his children. That's why we love it.
Absolutely. That was one of the great All-Star storylines. And yeah, there was some frantic donkey searching going on in that week leading up to the All-Star game. And Votto had to get the word out there that he was on the donkey hunt. And there were people who, I don't know, donkey experts, I guess, of where you acquire a donkey on short notice. And they wanted to get the right.
How many people do you think type in donkey on Craigslist?
You know, probably more than we care to, you know, they wanted to get a donkey, too. It was important to get a donkey who wasn't going to be scared off by the crowd at Great American Ballpark, because there was going to be a rousing ovation for that donkey, and I think they got a good one. So if you ask around, you can find the right donkey. So
you find a good donkey, you really got something there. Congratulations to Joey Votto.
Absolutely, and congrats to Zach Cozart on a nice deal with the Angels, who are looking like a pretty nice team. And, of course, they're trying to contend in the AL West with your world champion Houston Astros, who have been very active in recent days in the bullpen realm of things. And some interesting moves there, Richard. They signed Joe Smith, who, you know, I think kind of an underrated option in the back end of the bullpen. Not a guy who's closed many games, but certainly a guy who's eaten a lot of quality innings over the years for the Angels, for the Indians. So he now occupies a prominent role in the back end. They took, and Allison Footer and I discussed this on Friday's podcast, but they took a shot in the Rule 5 draft on Anthony Gose, former major league outfielder, turned pitching prospect, I guess. And that'll be interesting because they don't have a great left-handed relief option. So while nobody's expecting him to stick after the Rule 5, it's certainly worth a shot in spring training. And I'm sure you know, efforts will be made to get some stability there in general. But another effort in that realm is Hector Rondon. He was non-tendered by the Cubs, former closer for the Cubs, This is a right-handed option for them. And, you know, he had a rough and tumble kind of 2017 where, you know, walks and hits per innings pitch went way up. Walks went way up in general. Strikeout to walk rate went way down. But, you know, there's still some lightning in that arm. And I understood maybe why the Cubs non-tendered him, because, you know, his arbitration value was rising. But the Astros, he made $5.8 million last year and was probably going to get north of that in 2018. So you understand from the Cubs' perspective, but you also understand from the Astros' perspective of, you know, trying to recapture that past brilliance, and that would be a nice pickup for them.
Yeah, they're very excited that they had a good week. You know, they began this offseason saying, hey, we got one thing we have to fix, and that's the back of the bullpen. They like the relievers. You know, if August 1 All-Star break, they would have thought we're going to have one of the better bullpens in baseball with Chris Devinsky, Will Harris, Joe Musgrove, Ken Giles. And they all sort of hit a wall. I don't know that Ken Giles hit a wall, but he really struggled in the postseason. So they were going to bring all those guys back. I don't think they were ever looking on the high end on Greg Holland or Wade Davis. But they're pretty excited. Hector Rondon was a guy they identified early on. They got him for a 2-year, $8.5 million. And then a day earlier, they got Joe Smith for 2 years, $15 million. What you mentioned about, they don't have a left-handed option. They're really excited about Chris Devinsky. Was dominant against left-handed hitters this year. But, you know, that's the need that you look at. But Joe Smith was really good against right-handed hitters, and there's more of those in the American League West. And Rondon was fairly good against him. I think they look at him 10.8 strikeouts per nine last year is a guy that's going to bounce back, has been a closer. So I guess it's what a lot of these teams are doing. I don't know. I think Ken Giles may end up pitching the ninth inning again, but I think all the outs before that will just be mix and match, sort of the way a lot of managers do it now. And I think what we're seeing, I think I counted up 11 teams signed 16 relievers or something this week. So teams aren't going for the one guy. They're going for two guys or three guys. And that's where Rondon makes sense. What the Astros said today was, you know, we go to spring training with this group right now. We're plenty happy. We feel good. We feel like we addressed what we needed to do, but there's still more we would like to do. Obviously Wade Davis is such a figure still out there. And while I think it's going to be Cardinals or Cubs on him, you know, you never know. Tony Watson, I don't know that the Astros have any interest in him, but he is a guy that throws with that other hand, and that would be what they're looking for.
Yeah, and the finances of this relief market are fascinating, and really the going rate for quality setup work has been right around $9 million. I mentioned Rondon made $5.8 million with the Cubs last year, would have made north of that in arbitration most likely. He gets reported $8.5 million over 2 years with the Astros. So when you consider all those factors, potential for high value there for Houston, if he can recapture his old brilliance, we shall see. But the price has gone up in the relief market, and it's, we talked about how the market sometimes works backwards a little bit, and that's certainly been the case in the bullpen. It's been hard to keep track of who's gone where this week. There's been so much movement, but it's not hard to notice that the top two arms, as you mentioned, Wade Davis and Greg Holland, still unsigned. There was some talk of Holland being close with the Rockies earlier this week. That hasn't been nailed down just yet, but you know, last year, Mark Melanson, Aroldis Chapman, and Kenley Jansen, those guys were all signed by now and for record contracts, you know, the three highest relief contracts in history. And you can understand Davis and Holland aiming high. Chapman makes around $17 million a year, and Holland turned down, you know, 17 point whatever it was for the qualifying offer. So that might be where the aim is. But man, you know, it's a high price to pay, and you can understand why they're still lingering out there if they're searching for something in that neighborhood.
Yeah, and it was only, 5 years ago that I think it was Mike Adams became the first setup guy to get more than a one-year contract. I think this is right. He was either the first or the second. And now it's not unusual that the way we look at bullpen composition, the way we look at finish, the importance of getting those last nine outs, and the analytics-driven general managers, the guys that run on the data, they now look at bullpen construction in a different way. And let's face it, bullpen, you know, if the Rockies get this deal done with Holland, it'll be close to $100 million. But that's three arms, and the way they feel it, we're going to get the last nine outs of the game there. And those are high leverage situations. So we understand the starting pitchers ought to make more, but the value of those guys at the back has never been greater and has never been clearer. You know, like I talk to a guy like Chris Davinsky or Joe Musgrove in Houston all the time. Like, you sure you want to go back to starting? Because you can make a very nice living for yourself doing what you're doing, because teams value this. I heard Farhan Zaidi, the general manager of the Dodgers, said last year, we said, we got to quit paying relievers based on saves, based on holes. We just have to pay them based on how we view their value. And, you know, sometimes that big out is in the sixth inning or the seventh inning.
Well, you're no doubt about it. The analytics have played a huge role in the rise of, you know, relief usage, relief prices. So that's all fascinating stuff. But there's still room in this game for the sentimental side of things. Allison Footer and I discussed this on Friday, but that Stephen Piscotty trade from the Cardinals to the A's, and, you know, getting him closer to home where his mother is battling ALS in the Bay Area. That was such a great to see those two teams work that deal out. What were your thoughts on that one, Richard?
My thoughts are twofold. I'm so happy for Stephen Piscotty. Someone said this, I don't know who said this, the St. Louis Cardinals are the classiest organization in baseball. John Mozeliak did the right thing. And I don't know if he marketed Stephen Piscotty or whatever, but he did this for the guy. Stephen Piscotty will remember that for the rest of his life. The other thing it reminds me of is how quickly things can change. You and I are having this conversation 18 months ago. We look at Randall Grichuk and Stephen Piscotty as cornerstones, foundation guys. And Piscotty got the money that indicated the Cardinals thought that. And now both are not in the plans, or neither will be in the opening day lineup of the Cardinals as they move on, with Marcell Ozuna and Tommy Pham's earned a chance to play, and Dexter Fowler's there now. So the bigger story and the cooler story is this is a good day, you know, and a sad story for Stephen Piscotty. It's great that he's going to be able to continue his career and do it closer to his mom.
Absolutely. And the A's had a conference call with Piscotty on Friday. Here's what he had to say.
Huge outpouring of support, you know, obviously from the St. Louis fans and a lot of my teammates and the front office, all the way to out here in Oakland, and the people that I know so well and are so excited for me to be coming home. I've seen some posts and things, and people have been sending me screenshots of nice things that have been said. It's really, really humbling and cool to see, and our family just, feels so loved in a tough time.
All right, so Stephen Piscotty has a new home. Carlos Santana has a new home. A lot of guys starting to move around, a lot of moving and shaking happening, Richard, and hopefully the dam has broken here. And you said earlier that, things can change in a hurry in this game. I think there's going to be a lot of changes between now and the turn to 2018, the turn to January 1st, because, you know, once you get this kind of traction, things start to happen.
Yeah, it is. And there is a point where even the most methodical agent in history, Scott Boras, is going to say, okay, it's time to close the deal. You know, because players, you know, you and I have talked about it before, players want to know where the kids are going to be in school, where their apartment's going to be in spring training and all that. So we're getting close to that teams want to finalize things. You and I both know the Red Sox and Giants are anxious to get some certainty in what their roster is going to look like. And they're ready to do business. It'll happen. And then we're nearing that time. But at least we've got some action to talk about and some teams where you see rosters taking shape.
Absolutely. When the big moves go down, we'll be right here on the Morning Lineup podcast to break them down. My thanks to Richard Justice. My thanks to you for tuning in. And we'll see you next time.